Welcome to Courage Cocktail. I'm your host, Leanne McClymont. Glad you could join us. Oh, it's great to be back into the studio. We were snowed in last week. 9 inches of snow fell in the Piedmont region. And the only plows we seem to have down here in our region are tied to the farmers' tractors. So we stayed at home and worked and played. Many of you are also slammed with the winter weather and extreme cold. How are you? Do you think that spring will ever arrive? I do. Well, some of the time. Welcome to our 100th radio show. Thank you. I want to thank the team at WCOM for allowing our show to broadcast way back in June of 2011. I met with the programming committee in March of 2011 and pitched them the idea. They supported me and to help me find a way to serve you. Kat Devine, a member of that team, met me at Weaver Street Market when I was planning the first few shows. She helped me see the meaning of community radio, and she encouraged me to give my very best work to the WCOM audience. Audrey Layden, at that time, another wise woman serving on the board, helped me find the name to this show. I blurted it out to her. I said, "Audrey, all I want to do is give the listeners a break in the middle of the day, in the middle of the week, a Courage Cocktail for lunch." It was Audrey who insisted that I name the show this, so I thank her too as the godmother of this work. Without Bill, none of this would have been possible. He serves as the soundboard engineer and the stabling force as the studio swells with excitement. Are you ready for your 100th Courage Cocktail? Let's get started. I'm going to begin with a quote. It's a short one. It's by Mitch Albom. "Behind all your stories is always your mother's story, because hers is where yours begins." Remember, this is a story that's bigger than any one reporter. Today, we are gently cradling a piece of history. We are visiting the Stagville Plantation here in Durham, North Carolina, that we're broadcasting from Carrboro. The work, the songs, the story, the heartbeat is coming from the Stagville Plantation. Today, your Courage Cocktail features three special guests. They are Brenda Scott, Dr. Brenda Scott, the photographer, who has come up with this remarkable collection of black and white photographs that are going to be on exhibit at the North Carolina Museum of History starting March 1st. We have Beverly McNeil joining us. She has served as a dedicated board member of the Stagville Plantation in Durham, North Carolina. And we have Yolanda Hall standing and ready to go. She is our gifted jazz singer who is going to open with a beautiful song that we'll talk about after she sings.
Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child, alone, way from home. Sometimes I feel like I'm almost gone. Sometimes I feel like I'm almost gone. Sometimes I feel like I'm almost gone. Away up in the heaven from home.
Thank you, Lolanda. I'm speechless. Welcome to the radio show. We need your help. Tell us about this beautiful song.
Thank you so much for having me, and congratulations on your 100th episode. I want to say I was so honored to be asked to lend the musical soundscape for the photography that Dr. Scott had taken at Stagville, Stagville Black and White. When she approached me, I had no idea until I actually saw the incredible photographs, exactly the music that would be for this exhibit. Motherless Child is one of the original Negro spirituals that speaks of a mother who is going to lose their child, perhaps through the slave trade. And not just that, but families being separated from one another, and even the soul of a person having to come outside themselves. So when I saw the exhibit, I knew that this was one of those pieces that would fit appropriately. So I was so pleased to be able to do it. And also, it's not just for that faraway time or for just this. It's even in today's cinema. I don't know if a lot of people saw Django from Tarantino, but this particular piece was also in that. So it is such a strong piece of history that I was so pleased to be able to perform it.
Yolanda, there's so much we can talk about. Our program, listeners, is going to incorporate the threading of stories. We're not going to just have one voice and then another. We need all three women's voices. So I'm going to ask Dr. Brenda Scott, welcome to Courage Cocktail.
Thank you for having me here, and congratulations on your 100th show. It's very exciting.
I can't imagine a better way of opening and celebrating. Dr. Scott, there's so much about this photograph, and I know that we're on radio, so we have an extra challenge here where we have to use language to help our listeners see your work. Tell me about your pictures.
Well, you're very brave to have a photographer on a radio show, so thank you so much for trusting me with that. For me, I wanted to tell stories. So you can tell stories with words, you can tell stories with pictures, dance, music. And I think in pictures very often, so my stories come out visually. And when I went to Stagville, I could feel something, and I wanted to tell stories. So I just started making the images, and I just followed my heart with where it would lead me. And the whole time I've done this project, I have felt as if the project was leading me. It was doing itself. So one thing would lead to the next thing, and it would teach me what to do next and what to explore next.
How did you arrive this receptive? How did you let yourself be led? How do you enter into that trance?
When I pick up my camera, I feel as if I start viewing the world in a different way. And it's not a trance. It's not something that, I don't know, definable. But I do, the rest of the world drops away. So I'm looking through the camera, and the camera doesn't see the things that we do. Sometimes it sees more. Sometimes it sees less, but in a meaningful way. So I try to play with that vision and match it to what's in my head. And sometimes what's in my head comes out, and sometimes what's in the camera teaches the vision in my head. And it's this game we play, my camera and I.
What an amazing way of explaining this. Beverly McNeil, board member of Historic Stagville Plantation. This is where I need your help. So you see Dr. Scott wandering about with a camera. How did this happen?
I think basically she just showed up and wanted to take the pictures. And her energy and just her love for the project was just so palpable that everyone said, yes, absolutely, we must do this. And I think that if people come to Stagville, particularly at Horton Grove, which is where the standing slave cabins are, and I mean, these are the real buildings from 1850, 1851, in the same place where they were built. And there's one that was lived in from 1851 until the 1950s. The same family lived there. And there's just a feeling. We were talking about mother's stories. The first time I went to Stagville, there was a program, and then we went down to Horton Grove, and there was a libation ceremony. And I got out of the car, and I just thought, I feel my history here. Mm. I mean, I feel the strength. I feel the strong families. I feel the competence, because the buildings are incredibly well built. And my favorite picture, I fell in love with it as soon as I saw it. Brenda took a picture of the roof structure in the Great Barn. And the Great Barn was built in 1860 in about 6 months by a team of enslaved men. And the geometry of it is so incredible. I saw it and I thought, I have to have this in my house. And because I think we have our ideas about we don't see enslaved people as individuals. We see a group, slaves. And at Stagville particularly, where there were so many very, very skilled workers, you see that.
Well, let's, for our listeners' benefit, in case they hadn't gone out before, if we need to understand the scope, the scale of what Stagville Plantation is and was.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, in the 1850s, Stagville was the largest plantation in this part of North Carolina, which is very unusual because there were very few plantations in Piedmont, North Carolina. It was over 30,000 acres, over 900 enslaved people. So we're talking a small town, basically.
Yes.
With basically the skills that were needed and the materials that were needed for people being produced on site. So there's a blacksmith shop, a store, all kinds of things. A brickyard, two grist mills, a lumber mill.
It's a whole economy.
Yes, basically they were pretty much self-sufficient. Now, of course, the owner's family were very wealthy, so they could afford to buy things from Philadelphia or New York. But in terms of other things, they could pretty much produce what they needed.
So let's go back to the story. You find this photograph. You see the geometry. Dr. Scott, you have to help me now. Tell me how this contemporary lens helps us see the power of what was built in 1860.
A former student of mine put it very well. He said he had never thought about contemporary photography being able to show something from the past until he had seen my work. And when I create these pictures, I'm in black and white, which automatically, in many people's minds, harkens back to days gone by. So that, I hope, puts people in a different frame of reference already. And then I lie with my camera to try to tell the truth. So
what do you mean by that?
Well, I want people to, with my pictures, experience the place as close as I can come to how it would have been before my time, which means that if there's a laser smoke detector, I take it out with Photoshop. Or if there's a handicap ramp, I remove that, because that was not there in the 1799 or whenever that
was
created.
So it's the naked lens here. This is the naked truth, is what you're doing.
That's what I'm aiming for. I'm aiming for a greater truth than strict photojournalism, where one can't even remove a trash can just for the sake of beauty. I remove the evidence of Liggett Myers having used the Benahan house. There were phone jacks and air conditioning ducts, and so those have been taken out of my pictures. And I make no bones about it. I'm not trying to create images of what you will see exactly when you show up at Stagville today. Mm-hmm. But again, I'm trying to tell a story and get people to think about the people who lived there. Look at the geometry of the barn. Look at just the space. When one walks into the barn, and if you look up, you see what looks like a covered bridge or the hull of a ship upside down. It's enormous. It's is it
132 feet long.
No nails in the roof holding the supports. So this craftsmanship, this pride of work of the enslaved workers, can be seen in the beauty of the place. It didn't have to be beautiful. It had to be functional. It's a mule barn. But it is beautiful.
So much more than
it is.
And listeners, I truly encourage you. We will be shouting out websites through the course of the program. Dr. Brenda Scott's website is stagvilleblackandwhite.com, and that is www.stagvilleblackandwhite.com, all spelled out. There'll be many more other websites I'm going to give you this today, but that is one of the openings in the way of investigating this, and perhaps while we're talking, bring it up on your screen if you're streaming us. Now, I need to go back. Yolanda, can you tell us and lead us into another beautiful song that you've brought along with us?
Absolutely. I want to say that Dr. Scott wants people to experience, through looking at the photography, Stagville. And I truly can attest that from looking at her photographs, then she invited me into Stagville, it was real. And it was from that I actually performed the pieces in the Benahan house on site. So Motherless Child was done there, Swing Low Sweet Chariot, I've Been Buked. And I wanted to represent as best I could the music that reflected exactly what she saw, what was there, what our history reflects. Beverly also mentioned it so well when she said she felt it. In that space, I needed privacy. Let me feel the space. And there, I began to sing.
I've been buked, and I've been scorned. I've been buked, and I've been scorned. And I've been scorned. I've been talked about, shows you born. There is trouble all of this world.
And this was a piece of a soundtrack called I've Been Buked, and you recorded it in privacy inside a building at Stagville.
Yes, I did. I've Been Buked and I've Been Scorned. That is actually one of the first Negro spirituals. When you hear the words to that, it has despair, but it also has hope. Because despite all that they have gone through, they will not let their religion down. They may not say religion. They might say, I'm not letting my religion down. I ain't gwine let my religion down. And so you find the hope and the faith that these traditional spirituals give. They last. They are still in your churches. They are still in our hearts. We hear our mothers hum them sometimes, our grandmothers. So they are everything that this is about.
Dr. Scott, when you hear this music in clarity, in power and purity, how did that inform your work?
Well, first I have to say it affects me physically, and there have been very few instances in my life until I started working with Yolanda that this had happened. I get goosebumps. I tear up.
Yes.
So this, I'm astonished that, if anything, she's taken my project to another level, because the depth that she heard when she saw my photographs, and it's an incredible journey that we've had together. And we didn't know that this would happen, but working together is a joy and a privilege and an honor. And it began in 1985. Is this okay to say now?
Of course. Tell us now. There's a great story behind this. Well, I couldn't make this up, by the way.
So I was the new awkward kid who had moved in from Virginia. And I went to C.E. Jordan High School, and I had auditioned for the wind, string, and choral ensemble, which I imagined would be some Renaissance group or some early music. We would be doing some Baroque pieces, perhaps. Well, I went in with my cello, and I played some Bach, and I think I played a Saint-Saëns concerto, part of a first movement or something. And then the choir director, Mrs. McKeever, said, "No, come over and sing this note." And I believe I was a rude high school kid and said, "Why? I'm a cellist." And she said, "Sing this note." And so I did. It wasn't pretty, but I could match pitch. And then she kept going. "So fine." She said, "Right, you're in." And I said, "Okay." So I left. And then I show up to first day of class, and I'm late because I couldn't find I couldn't find my way around.
Are you a freshman by any chance?
I was not. I was a junior.
I was a junior. What a time to come into a high school.
2 years in another high school, 2 years at Jordan. And I walked in the room, and Mrs. McKeever said, "Brenda, go sit up there with Yolanda." And then Yolanda was raising her hand, and she's with the first sopranos. I said, "First sopranos? What?" That's where we met.
And what happened next, Yolanda?
Oh, goodness. First, I was like, "No, not next to me, not next to me." And, you know, there's the chair. She sat. And we introduced ourselves. And I tell you, we hit it off.
But now it's because we don't know how all this works. You were sent up there not to play your cello, but you, Dr. Scott, were sent to Yolanda to do something else. What was it?
Well, I was supposed to sing, but I have no voice. And you've heard Yolanda, and she's got the most beautiful vocal instrument I think I've heard in my whole life. And so here I was, squeaky and terrible, but I could read music. And so I ended up being the navigator, because before music school, I think I was better at navigation. Now you're fine. Obviously, you're better than I am at it. But then I was the navigator, and you were the one who made it all happen. She was the voice. I was the navigator.
And how does this work, Yolanda? So Dr. Scott led you to the music, and you sang it?
Well, I sang the music. I couldn't read music.
Okay.
So here it was, the reader and the singer, and we put it together. So it's just like this project. 30 years later, she navigated, and I came in, and here we are.
Beverly, I have to bring you in here. Are you feeling like that high school teacher saying, you must help each other? Tell us, I listen to these arts, and simultaneously. So when you look at your art, you have an art. You are caring for this historic piece of history.
Yes. Well, we are so very lucky that the Benahan House is still there. Mm-hmm. 1788 and 1799 wings. And I must say, I thank the person who was head of the legitimized division that owned Stagville that they didn't tear it down, in addition to the great barn and the slave cabins. They used all those buildings, and so we still have them.
For how many years were they used as part of Liggett Myers?
Well, Liggett and Myers bought some of the land from the plantation in 1954, and they owned it until 1976. And oddly enough, they were also growing cattle out there, which is really strange for this part of North Carolina. I mean, they actually had quarter horses. At one point, after another barn burned down, a more modern one, they actually had horses in the great barn. So it's just such an incredibly special place. And I think my connection with the barn is I'm the daughter of an engineer and the mother of an engineer. So when I went in there, I mean, that building just speaks to me. I think it is the most magnificent building in North Carolina. And because it's so, and, you know, the history of the plantation is really interesting. It was not, you know, in South Carolina and Virginia, you get plantations that came from land grants from the king where someone got thousands of acres at one time. No, Richard Benahan came to North Carolina from Virginia with a very small inheritance because he was the fifth of six sons, so there wasn't much for him, and bought an interest in a store and started buying parcels of land, so it was assembled.
I see. So he was, he was trying to build
yes.
his mm-hmm. own value. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't inherited.
No, not at all. Or very little of it was inherited. And so he came here, and his wife was also from a planter family, so she was actually the wealthy one. She brought property and enslaved people into the marriage. But he came here in the 1760s. By 1799, he owns 3,000 acres. And this is not happening. I mean, even though he was a very good businessman, I'm not in the least going to put that down. And he was a fantastic record keeper, which we love. We've got the best, probably among the best plantation records in the country.
And that is extremely valuable for our children.
Yes, because in my own family, I joke that I'd sell my dog if we had the kind of records about our family during enslavement that people have at Stagville. One of our volunteers, Robin Winfrey, did was working with a database that a grad student at Duke had done, mentions of over 3,500 individual enslaved people. And she's been putting it into Family Tree Maker so people can come and use the information. The papers themselves are actually at UNC because the family was very involved with the university. But it's just an incredible place. And to go to Horton Grove and stand in the Holman House as I'm going to be doing Friday night, sit on the steps of the Hart House, which is the one that was lived in so long, and sell tickets because we're having an event on Friday and Saturday. It's just mind-boggling. It is, you know, and I think this plantation was successful because of the enslaved workers.
Exactly.
And I think that's what people miss about plantations, that they are symbolic of the way that people can use their talents to create magnificent things.
We want to talk about your Stagville organization. And it's in North Carolina. They have a website that I've been to many, many times. It's stunning. It is www.stagville.org, and that is stagville.org.
Yes.
And you're running an event on Friday.
Yes.
What's that about?
Well, we have a relationship with a theater company in Durham called Bear Theater, and they are phenomenal. But what they have done, and this is our third year, they take the old interviews, the WPA interviews, of people who had been enslaved and turn them into monologues, and they do them in the buildings. And it is so incredibly powerful. So this year, people will be around a fire hearing some, and they're in two of the slave cabins. And they are, it's just so incredible.
So that's on Friday.
Friday
this
night
evening.
And Saturday night.
Well, okay.
And then also the 28th and March 1st.
Ah, localized genius.
Yes.
Now, this is what I'd like to do. We're going to head out for a small announcement, a small PSA, and when we return, we're going to listen to some more of Yolanda's gorgeous voice, and we have to talk more about these photographs with Dr. Scott. Stay with me.
WCOM, your all-volunteer community radio station in Carrboro, needs your support. Do you have an idea for a radio show? How about an interest in engineering or a computer background? Are you interested in fundraising or just meeting a group of wonderful people? Please consider a donation of time or money to support this gem of the community. To find out more, please check out our website, WCOMFM.org. That's WCOMFM.org.
Welcome back to Courage Cocktail Radio Show. I'm your host, Leanne McClymont. Glad you could join us. We are in the process of celebrating our 100th episode, and it's our centenary show here in the loving studios at WCOM in the heart of Carrboro, North Carolina. So glad you tuned in today with me to make this show special. In our studio today with three guests, we have a jazz singer, Yolanda Hall, who has been singing with us through the course of the show and will continue to share some cuts of her CD. And I also have Beverly McNeil from the Stagville Organization, Historic Stagville, which is the showcase of our program today. And the whole impetus behind this program was the remarkable work of a photographer, Dr. Brenda Scott, who is sitting with us also. Well, as I promised, I'd like us to play a segment of a beautiful song called Swing Low, and listen in, and we will have Yolanda explain it to us after.
Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home, sweet. Coming for to carry me home. I looked over Jordan, and what did I see? Coming for to carry me home, a band of angels coming after me. Coming for to carry me home, sweet love, sweet chariot. Coming for to carry me home, sweet.
Yolanda, can you tell us how you recorded this?
Visualizing what that song truly, truly represents. I don't think there's many people today that don't know the song Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. I've performed it as far away as Finland. And yet, the beautiful melody, the harmony, there was more to it under that. Swing Low, Sweet Chariot is one of our call and response songs in slavery. And it really was a message. It was when they would sing that song, you have to think about it. At that time, music was really all the slaves were really allowed to have. A singing slave was a happy slave. And a lot of times they did not know, the plantation owners, that these songs were messages, were a way of communication. So Swing Low, Sweet Chariot is really about the Underground Railroad, escape, crossing rivers to freedom. And so it is just one of those pieces that, again, was a part of this exhibit. You know, it was perfect for it.
I turn to you, Dr. Brenda Scott, because I need your help. I need to help our listener see these pictures, and I'd like you to, if you can, describe one photograph, composition, and why it's so important.
So imagine the texture of old wood on an old barn. Often it's gray, even when it's in color, if that makes sense. So it's gray, and you can see all of the wear and tear on the wood. And then imagine this wood being made into a door on an old outbuilding on an old barn. And what's keeping it closed is a big, heavy, slightly rusted chain with big links. In my exhibit, you'll see a number of images with chains. And they're not just things that you see around Stagville as props. In my mind, I think about the chains of slavery,
both the literal chains of people being chained and chained in the ships coming over, chained at the market, chained. So there are chains. But when you look at this image with the chain keeping the door closed, but not completely closed, then you see the links. And like Stagville is living history, and you can go and experience it. And I encourage you to do that. This whole project is to draw people back to the site. But that is our link, like the links on that chain that you see in your mind. And it's slightly sagging, it's slightly worn, but it's still strong. And our connections are very strong with our past, whether we realize that or not. And I want people to start thinking about those connections when looking at my images.
I can't imagine a more crystal clear idiom for the work that you three are doing and of creating, and with the support of the North Carolina Museum of History. So this links to me describes how the three souls that are in my studio today have smiling, are happy, have worked their fannies off to produce this remarkable collection of genius, and with a great deal of how we hold our history. And we hold our history, we cradle history. Anyone who understands pain will only be able to hold history carefully. And when I think about the gifts you've given our listener today, I'm humbled. I would like to have a few more conversations with the three of you as time advances, of course. And listeners, we're not wrapping up quite yet, although the time is approaching. I'd like to throw a question out to Beverly. Beverly, when you look at the commitment of time and love that you've made to historic Stagville, what is it now that you see that you may not have seen before Dr. Scott's photography or Dr. Yolanda's beautiful voice?
Well, I think that it's just another way to reach people with the story. And as I said, you know, Brenda was around, standing on ladders, taking pictures, all kinds of places.
With your permission, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
But still.
Kids, don't try this unsupervised.
No, no. Okay. Especially not in the barn. I'm still trying to figure out how she managed some of those angles, because she had to have been standing on some fairly unsteady places. But it is such a treasure. And I think that people focus, I mean, slavery was horrible. I mean, it's one of the most American race-based, slavery was one of the worst things that humanity has done. There have been some pretty bad things, but
humanity.
It's pretty bad.
Yes.
But on the other hand, it's part of our history as Southerners, and we have to deal with it. And it's not all bad. And so I think that people coming to Stagville gives you a sense of people as individuals. You think, oh, he made that, she made that. And so that all of a sudden it's not some amorphous mob of people, but it's individuals with skills who love their families. And we do have, a few of the WPA interviews that are from Stagville. And one, the most famous escapee, actually has fairly extensive, there's actually a book written about her. So, and then people from Stagville changed North Carolina. Reverend Latta, who went over to Raleigh from Stag after emancipation and started a school. So people are doing things. There are people who came into Durham and started businesses. The Amy family, who had a funeral home until fairly recently, were originally enslaved at Stagville. So this is all part of our history. And we've got to acknowledge it.
Yolanda, this is important for me to understand. Your music, your art form. You have a beautiful instrument. It's chillingly beautiful.
Thank you.
You've used it to support us today, to learn, to feel, to be present, fully present, to what happened, what is happening, and what our future holds. You've been working hard on a jazz career. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yes, I actually had taken a long break from my jazz. And of course, it was this project that I'm working on right now that sort of just opened the door again for me to use the voice that God has given me. Jazz in itself, well, what can you say? It has its roots based on African slavery, the slaves being brought here. That music, that foundation is what jazz is built on. So for me, as a jazz singer, I've been blessed to be able to have that rich history in the music that I sing. And so just being able to do this project, it just put the light bulb back on, Yolanda. Ah, do the music, sing, you know. And so it's all wrapped up in one, my art, my gift, this project, and I'm certainly going to be bringing forth some of my music.
And for listeners, you need to visit her website. It is www.yolandahalljazz.com. And that is a website that holds some great music. It's being upgraded, and it will change rapidly. But it will be a way for you all to listen to this magnificent voice and to a much, much deeper collection than the one we've showcased today. And I'll say this again. It's www.yolandahalljazz.com. And we will be pulling out the show with a very special song, a track that is called Don't Wake Me. And you're going to have to cue this for us, though. If you could, Yolanda, could you tell us where that composition came from?
Oh, yes. It came from my heart. I would love for you, if you could repeat that quote that you opened with.
Thank you. This is Mitch Albom's quote, and he was the wonderful author who wrote many books at Tuesdays with Murray. This is the quote, "Behind all your stories is always your mother's story, because hers is where yours begins."
I had no idea that that was a quote that you would have on this show, and I must tell you, it's even hard to speak about it. Don't wake me, let me sleep. I wrote after the death of my mother in 2001, Brenda Hall. I had the opportunity for many years, for those who have lived in this area, to have worked with the wonderful, incredible jazz pianist and arranger, Brother Yusef Saleem. There's nobody in this area that knows anything about jazz that does not know his name. I was under his tutelage for many, many years. I came from actually a classical background. So after my mother passed, I would always dream of her. And I can even sort of see how this weaves into this project. And I would wake up and I just didn't want to be awakened. And at 2 o'clock one morning, I wrote the words to the song. I wrote the music to the song. I called Brother Yusef, went to his house the next day. We went to my mother's house, and right there is where it was created. So it's called again, Don't Wake Me, Let Me Sleep.
Don't wake me, let me sleep.
Beautiful voice of Yolanda Hall singing her own music called Don't Wake Me. That's a premiere today. I don't think we've let that release. I'm so honored that you shared that with us and our listeners.
Thank you.
I'm speechless. I'm so grateful for all three women to join us today. And I want to tell you what inspired me while I was building this show. I think I've shared this with Dr. Scott. What inspired me is that love creates beauty. And
yes.
Each one of you has shown such tremendous love that it's just a remarkable coincidence that I happened to bring you into the studio to celebrate the 100th birthday of Courage Cocktail. So before my voice quavers off, I'd like to close the show by saying thank you. I thank WCOM for helping us build this Courage Cocktail. I also thank the great beauty of the town of Carrboro, who's welcomed us with loving arms. I want to thank my sponsors, the Triangle Swim School. Their website is www.triangleswimschool.com, and also the Authors Boutique, which is www.authorsboutique.com. I will be here with you all next week. I hope you have a wonderful week and hope you continue to listen and enjoy your Courage Cocktails. You remember, you bring the lunch and I'll bring the Courage Cocktail. Thanks for listening.